You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 2014. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White, recording for you in a basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's show, out of Philadelphia, we have Mr. John Gentile.
What up, bros?
Things that you say just like totally endear you to your critics immediately.
You know, I used to ignore the criticism, and then I addressed it, I baited criticism, you know? It's like, there's a story of Bon Scott of AC/DC. When he moved to Australia, they tried to beat him up because he talked like a Scotsman instead of an Australian. So he started speaking with a heavier Scottish accent instead of an Australian accent. So I was doing that for a while, and I was rumbling. But after a while, I'm like, arguing with these guys is completely pointless. It gets no one anywheres. So now I'm more back on than just ignoring them, you know what I mean? And just being me, doing what I got to do. I don't know if you guys watch the show Modern Family, but Sophia Vergara.
Sophia Vergara.
Her son on that show, that's me, if you guys watch that show. I'm being how I be, Adam. Being how I be.
I have little idea what we're talking about. Also joining me on tonight's show, out of South Florida, Mr. Mark Little.
What's up, everybody? I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad that John's embracing his inner John Gentile.
That's what we try to do here. The Punk News Podcast is all about being yourself, right?
And also let me just say, Sophia Vergara was my hugging. Neighbor when I lived in South America.
What about her?
Sophia Vergara was my neighbor when I lived in South America.
What do you mean by neighbor?
She lived a couple blocks away from me.
Oh, did you see her a lot?
Oh, yeah. I used to see her at the store all the time.
Is she cool? I bet she's cool.
She was actually really friendly, and she was as pretty in person as she is on television. Actually, it's really surprising for me to see her on television here. It's really cool.
Was she famous then?
Oh yeah, totally.
She was. Did you ask her out on a date?
No.
I would give it a shot. Who knows? You could have been the next Mr. Sophia Vergara, Mark. Just think, man. She's cool.
Missed opportunities. Yeah, you see her with her son in the store all the time on Sundays.
Oh, I know. Oh, was she married at the time? Is she married?
I don't think she was married at the time. I just saw her. Her kid was about 6 or 7 years old, I think.
Well, fair enough. Adam White, man, I hear some bottles clinking over there. What's going on over there on your side of the podcast way out in Canada?
So I started talking about this before we started recording, and they said we had to record this because, I don't know, my horrible liquor cabinet selection is news to the world. So this sucks. Right now I'm drinking peppermint schnapps with ice and some ginger ale, and let me tell you, it is a horrible drink. It's sort of like I'm drinking like toothpaste and Christmas at the same time, and I don't want to drink any of those things. And the sad reason why I have peppermint schnapps is because, well, first of all, the sad reason I'm drinking peppermint schnapps is because I'm lazy and haven't gone to the store, and we don't have any real booze in the house. The sad reason I have peppermint schnapps is because years ago when my grandmother died, and we moved my grandfather out of their house and, like, sold their house for them, we had to get rid of all the liquor that was in the liquor cabinet. And you think that, like, hey, free liquor for everyone, this is great. So my brother and I go down there and crack open the liquor cabinet, and we're like, all right, we're going to split up what's in here and, like, live like kings of liquor. And what do we get? We get, like, weird old people liquor. So I got a big bottle of creme de menthe. I don't know what the fuck to do with that. And this is peppermint schnapps, and it, you know, it's like alcoholic toothpaste. So this kind of sucks.
Please tell me you're drinking out of some kind of crazy snifter or like glass pipe, like brandy thing that you're drinking out of.
I'm actually drinking it out of a mason jar, so I don't know if that's any better.
Classy.
Adam, when we record next week, you're not going to be like drinking Listerine or something, are you? Or rubbing alcohol?
Oh God, by next week I'm going to be down to like bitters and like the last slug out of a bottle of Drambuie or something. It's not going to be good. Yeah, so send booze to Adam White, care of the Punk News Podcast. So we wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about potential changes that we're going to make to the show. Not that we necessarily have any internal pressure to make any changes, because we just kind of do what we want each week. But, you know, we want to shake it up. It's been, you know, 200 odd episodes of this, and we want to see what we can do to make this better and more interesting to you. So specifically you, the listeners, this is your homework now. And this is very important that you actually do this, because if you do not give us the feedback that we're requesting, we're just going to start making all sorts of horrible left turns in this show, and it's going to make it worse. And then when all of a sudden you turn in here and it's like the dubstep power hour that we all talk with like helium voices or something like that, you're going to be like, what the fuck happened to the Punk News Podcast? Well, the reason is that you didn't email podcast@punknews.org and tell us what you wanted. So here's the one thought that I had. And this seems kind of a cool idea to me, but I don't know how feasible it is, but I'm curious what you, the listeners, would think of doing something like this. Let's say instead of a hour and 15 minute or whatever the show clocks in at a week, we cut her down so it was really two shows a week, and each show is, you know, no more than half an hour. And we only really record them when there's a cool piece of news that pops up that we really want to dig into, so that we're not sort of obliged to talk about boring stories or anything like that that happened. We'd hop on the show, have a cool little conversation, play one or two songs, boom, out in half an hour. I don't know. To me, I like the idea. It's got some brevity to it, which is, there's the big punk rock part of my brain that likes things that are short and fast and loud. So that's kind of cool. But I don't know if that makes any sense, or I don't know if that's what you dig. You know, do you guys listen to these shows to like the 40-minute mark plus, or is that a more digestible chunk of audio for you to live with? So that's what I want to know. That's, I guess, the first question. So, you know, is that cool? Would you guys like that? You want us to try it out? Or better yet, do you have any other suggestions about how we should switch things up? Suggestions that don't involve like get better audio quality, because that costs money. So anyways, you want to email podcast@punknews.org and let us know what you guys like, what you guys want. You know, if you love everything and don't want us to change it, then we just won't. But, you know, I want some suggestions. I want to know what you guys think we should do. Suggestions like that are like, you know, bring back Rich are not things that I have the power to do. So, you know, I'd love to, but I can't do that. So you're just stuck with us. So
yeah. Stop those emails.
Yeah, stop emailing about Rich. I don't even know where he lives.
But if you would like to hear the Dubstep Power Hour, please write in, because I'm thrilled to start the Dubstep Power Hour.
We'll just insert those episodes into our feed and just foister them on people that don't actually want them. That's what I want to do. So that's our question for you, the people, that we want you to answer. So, you know, if you could deal with that, you could deal with that. Now, enough about us. Let's talk about the Buzzcocks.
I'll start us off, because I know Adam White. I know you're a big fan of this band, but I believe you are at a self crisis regarding this new single. The Punk News listeners might know. Well, Buzzcocks are one of the first wave English punk rock bands. That you could probably say they were either like the fourth or fifth English punk rock band. Sex Pistols, Damn, Clash, and Buzzcocks are pretty much like the first four. Well, they've got a new album coming out in November. It's called The Way, but they just released a single. It's going to be out in America on 1234 Go Records, which is that record store over in Oakland. The album's actually already been out for a while via Pledge Music, but this is the wide release of it. Meanwhile, they've released a digital online single called It's Not You. Adam White, I know you're a Buzzcocks maniac. Did you dig It's Not You? Are you excited for the new album?
I'm really excited for the new album. I didn't super dig this song, and not even that in that I didn't enjoy this song. It's just that this song doesn't really have a hook to me. And I'm, you know, I'm listening to it and I'm bobbing my head and I'm like, this is pretty rocking. And I really like the sound of everything the Buzzcocks have done in the 2000s. the self-titled record and then Flatpak Philosophy, like, I like the sound that they did there. They kind of took the, hey, we're a bunch of old guys now that are actually fairly experienced in what we've done, so we can't necessarily play the skittish, nervous energy card the same way we could when we were all, like, tweaked out kids. So they actually got really muscular. And there's something about the sound of, like, especially that 2000 Buzzcocks record, outside of maybe the one single Six City Sometimes, that the sound on that record is not that far from, I don't know, like the Epitaph era Hot Water Music records that were coming out at that time. Like, sonically, there's not a huge bridge between, like, Caution or the new What Next and that Buzzcocks record, which is kind of weird because you don't expect Buzzcocks necessarily to have that kind of, like, big beefy rock sound thing, but they do on those records, and it's good, and they pull it off, and it's cool. So this song, I actually think it sounds really cool. There's a comment on Punk News that I really agree with, which is, like, you know, they sound still like they're a band rocking out in a garage, which is great. I'm cool with that. I just don't think there's a hook in this song. So, you know, to me, it's not a great single. And I would really hope that there's stuff on the record that's better than that. So, you know, I'm still excited for the record. I'm not super stoked on this track. That's all.
I had no idea, Adam, that you were such a big Buzzcocks fan, to be honest. I was really kind of getting off on listening to you talk about this, because when you were comparing them to the Hot Water Music records of the early 2000s, I'm a big fan of those records, and that makes me want to revisit that era of the Buzzcocks, to be honest with you, because I haven't, for the last 10 years, I haven't paid really much attention to their newer music, but I've seen them when they've come through town. They play at a club down the street probably every couple of years. I saw them on Warped Tour, I guess it was 7 or 8 years ago when they played. And it was a great time, great show, and I always appreciate it for the history of it, and I love the early singles also. But when I heard the song, I've got to say that I really did like it, and this does make me excited for the new record also. I didn't realize it was available on Pledge Music before, so I'm totally into checking this out.
Yeah, after the singles going steady era of Buzzcocks, where they went and they started releasing their own full lengths, there was this degree of declining quality, or at least increasing sort of, like, new wavy weirdness that was creeping into things. And then you had Shelley and Devoto and everyone else doing their own stuff, and they petered out and they became, you know, weird solo acts, and that's what they did. And I don't know if any of the, even like the stuff that they released in the 90s, I don't think is really all that great. But once they, I don't know if they ever really broke up, but once they had their big second wind, or whatever you want to call that self-titled record that came out, they sound just like a completely re-energized band. So I get that, like, that the Hot Water Music comparison, a lot of people are probably scratching their heads and being like, what? And I'm not talking about, like, songwriting wise or genre wise or anything like that. I just mean, like, the way those records. Yeah, beard wise, I guess beard people could be into it for sure. No, just the way those records sound. They're big rock records, and that's what the two Buzzcocks albums that came out in the 2000s have sounded like. So I'm expecting this one to, at the very least, be a really nice rock and roll record, and I'm just crossing my fingers for a few more interesting things than this track puts forth. But I don't know. I don't want to criticize it too much. I'm excited. I didn't even know there was a new Buzzcocks record coming out until we started talking about this podcast. So I'm really stoked for this. It's cool that 1-2-3-4 Go is releasing it too, because they're just like a little record, they're a little label out of what, San Francisco, Oakland, somewhere. Yeah, Oakland. So that, you know, that's a cool little connection that they're going and doing it through them. So I'm really excited to hear this. So November is when we got to wait for.
You know,
I'm going to clink my grandma booze a little bit.
Grandma, this booze is for you, Grandma. What I like about the new Buzzcocks record is that someone's grandma could have been a fan of the Buzzcocks when they were on the first time.
And drink your schnapps.
So when drink your schnapps. No, what I like about the Buzzcocks record is, I mean, Adam's right. It's not quite the nervous energy of the earliest Buzzcocks, but I do like how it still has that Buzzcocks buzz to it, if you will. You know, some real energy, some real power. I'm glad this band isn't getting wimpier as they get older. They're getting actually, like, kind of, you know, more powerful, which I appreciate. I'm not a Buzzcocks maniac. I am a Buzzcocks fan. I will check this out. But even more so than the Buzzcocks, I'm a huge Howard Devoto fan. So if you can, check out the Howard Devoto spinoff band from the Buzzcocks magazine, which is a lot like David Bowie's Eno Years, which is it's great, great, great band. But I'm looking forward to this. This will be cool.
Yeah, it's I'm excited. So let's talk about more stuff I'm excited about here. So Mariachi El Bronx, the alter ego of the LA punk band The Bronx, has released the first song from their new upcoming third record. The track is titled New Beat. The record is just titled Three, which is, well, keeping in the way that The Bronx titles everything that they do. Now, it being titled Three probably means that there's no title and it's just you just got to look at the cover. So anyways, it's due out in November as well. You can check out the song New Beat streaming over at where is it? SoundCloud right now. So we have the link on Punk News. So you can go check that out. I like Mariachi El Bronx way more than I think I should. I don't know what that means, but like I feel
they're
like
fun.
They're fun, and I feel that there's probably a fair amount of shtick to the band, and I got to imagine that there's, like, some, like, hardcore mariachi people that think they're, like, appropriating the culture or something like that, but it's super delightful to me, so I'm just going to live with that.
Well, Mariachi El Bronx does have some legit to it. Some of Los Lobos are in Mariachi El Bronx. Punk News listeners may or may not know who Los Lobos is. They had a very, very loose connection back in the early 80s. They're really almost more of like a pop group, really. But they brought Hispanic music to rock, you know, modern rock radio in the States. And so by Mariachi El Bronx bringing some of Los Lobos into their bands, they're bringing in like legit historians or legit carriers of the Mexican music tradition.
I did not know that.
And also a fun fact for the touring band, Rebecca from the World in Front of Friendship Society is playing violin with them right now.
Well, there you go. You know, what's interesting about mariachi music is I thought mariachi music was just kind of like that oompa music you see in movies and stuff, you know, like the five Mexican guys in like the suits and the hats. But that's not actually mariachi music. Specifically, mariachi music is an exact set of instruments played in an exact style. And it's not even really that old. It's only about 120, 130 years old, and you can actually trace it to an exact birthplace. Also, interestingly enough, I always wonder, I'm like, you know, Mexican music kind of sounds like German polka or oompa music. And the reason is, I didn't even know this, back in the 1800s, there was a lot of Germans living in Mexico. So mariachi music is actually emerging of German music and native Mexican music. I didn't even know this.
Huh. I've never even made the comparison between mariachi music and oompa music.
Well, I mean, listen, I mean, it's basically the same beat. You know, it's the like both of them. You know, the tuba or whatever it is. Anyway, this is cool, man. I'm down for any punk rock that is wild, wacky, fun, and breaks boundaries. This is doing just that. I'll check this out. I think this is cool.
This is gonna be a great record. I'm really excited to hear it. This is going to be a lot of fun. I've kind of like Adam, I like this song a lot more than I think I should.
I kind of think people like Mariachi El Bronx more than they like the Bronx these days, to tell you the truth.
I got to say, the first couple Bronx records were way more interesting than the last couple Bronx records. And I liked the last couple Bronx records. So, I get that. I could see why.
But I have a question. What do we call this record? Because, I mean, I know that it's got the Roman numeral on the record cover, but because it's Mariachi El Bronx, do we call it Tres or is it Three?
I'm saying Tres.
We'd have to ask Green Day, really.
Nice.
Well, no, or we could ask Bono when he could say Catorce when he means four.
He'll download that to our iTunes.
So speaking of...
We can't talk about Bono. It's too soon. So yeah, okay, keep going. I cut you off. Lead this sucker in.
Well, speaking of things that people are getting excited about, Sick of It All, which people are not sick of, people are quite excited by, they've released a new single. The new single is called DNC, as in Do Not Comply, and the single's already out. You can check it out at punknews.org. The new album's out September 30th, so just about the time you heard this. This was a lyric video, and I know Adam White hates lyric videos, but Adam White, first of all, A, do we even need lyric videos at all? B, do we need lyric videos for this song, which has pretty clear lyrics and not that many lyrics?
The chorus is them yelling DNC. You could not have any song, aside from an instrumental song, that has less of a need for a lyrics video. except they're, I don't know, like Surfing Bird. I guess like Surfing Bird would be a really shitty song to have.
How about a lyric video for Tequila? Tequila.
I'm thinking like Sex and Violence by The Exploited. I'd like that to be a lyric video. Oh God. So yeah. I really like all of the new Sick of It All stuff. It sounds super fun and energized to me. I'm cool with it. It's good. This song is sort of unlike the first song that we heard off this record, which I don't remember what it's called right now. But this track is the band sort of at their most charmingly dumb. Mm. Like they're not saying anything. They're just doing like New York hardcore bro chanting, and that's cool. That's what they do. I get that. But man, if there was ever a song that doesn't need a fucking lyric video, this is the one. I don't know. Why does anyone need this? I don't understand what the whole purpose of this is. Like, I guess it's, I got to imagine that, like, putting the marketing hat on, someone's going, well, if you have the choice just between throwing this on SoundCloud and throwing this on YouTube, there's more people on YouTube, so they're more likely to find it. So that's probably where you want to put it. But if you're going to put it on YouTube, let's go spend $500 and get a animator to put together a lyric video for it, just so that it's something, given that we're not going to go film like a whole music video. Like, I get the economics and the social media blah 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 of doing that, but holy shit do I hate lyric videos. So yeah, there you go. Good business plan, shitty thing.
Adam, do you feel compelled to watch them instead of just putting them on in the background?
No, I don't watch them almost as a point of rebellion in my life. But you, like, I'll start playing it, even if it's a good lyric video. I'll be like, ah, I see what you're doing, and then I'll like minimize it and go look at something else, stare at the wall, right?
I'll teach them a lesson. Let me stare at this wall while the song plays. Take that, Sick of It All. So Adam, what to lyric videos, what you're saying is you're sick of them all.
Oh. I think Adam likes lyric videos as much as I like Morrissey.
Mark, do you like this track? Do you like Sick of It All? Are you down with the NYHC?
I'm not the biggest NYHC fan, to be honest, but it's kind of hard to hate on Sick of It All. I mean, they're one of those bands. It's so funny because a band that has a long career, people start to hate on them as it goes on because they don't change, they don't evolve, they don't kind of get up with the times. But Sick of It All has pretty much stayed exactly the same for the 373 years that they've been together. And I can't really hate on that at all. And this song, it's I'm not going to lie, it's a fun song. They're coming down here in about a month. They're going to play at a pub down in Miami. And I'm totally going to be there for the show. I'm kind of into it. I'm not going to lie.
I really like the first Sick of It All single. You know, hardcore is on lockdown. This track I was not blown away with. I think the music's pretty good. I think they could have put in another day's worth of work on the lyrics and made something a little bit more intellectually stimulating. That being said, I think the message is actually pretty fantastic. They're basically saying you should read the Constitution and protect the fundamental rights guaranteed by the Constitution. And I mentioned that today, September 17, Constitution Day. As I've stated before, I think constitutional rights are being eroded more and more, generally speaking. So I think it's important to focus on that. And I mean by both sides of the political spectrum. So I think it's cool that Sick of It All is kind of – I mean, it's kind of like, you know, Sick of It All, they're kind of tough guys. I mean, not that they go around beating people up, but Sick of It All, you know, they revel in machismo. Not that there's anything wrong with that. So it's interesting they're like, you know, pay attention to what George Washington and Thomas Jefferson said. Listen to those guys. You know, so it's rare that, you know, tougher guys are giving you a history lesson, I guess, in colonial America history. But that's precisely what they're doing here. I thought the lyrics could have been a little bit stronger. I think the hook could have been a little bit stronger. But it's cool. I'm definitely excited for the new Sick of It All record. I think it's going to be one of the band's better albums for sure.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't really know what else there is to say about this one. I kind of thought it was about the Democratic National Convention at first, and then it wasn't.
Not comply, Adam. Do not comply with statutes that violate one's constitutional rights. But since you're Canadian, we don't have
constitutional rights. It's just like tyranny up here all the time.
Actually, in Adam, like, do they have like some kind of fundamental like document that like can't like that how you protect your fundamental rights? Like,
yeah, what, we, what, yeah, we.
what protects you against unreasonable search and seizure?
Well, there's a couple things. We have the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms is what most people will refer to up here. So you'll hear a lot of when people are talking about like Canadian law or issues that come up, you'll hear like charter rights mentioned a lot. And like that phrase in particular, like you'll see that a lot in our news where people are talking about, oh, this is against my charter rights. And it's funny because like the Charter of Rights and Freedoms isn't actually all that old. And it's mainly because Canada up until, I want to say 1982 or something like that, still had aspects of our legal system that was tied back to England. So we didn't actually have like a codified like document of rights that was purely our own up until around then. So it's definitely something people are passionate about, but it's something that's recent enough that there is actually still like contention amongst like certain conservative political bodies in the country about the contents of the charter. So it's something that's far, it's still considered to be very, very, very important, but it's not as say like sacrosanct as I guess like the Bill of Rights in the US, just because it doesn't have that amount of history behind it. So like people will still argue about it in a way that like it's not a religious document.
Interesting. And actually, I'm gonna give the kids a little bit of a history lesson, because I know we have some younger listeners, kids that are 12, 13, 14 out there. And I think I could be wrong. I think history is not being taught as much in the United States public school district as it used to be. I could be wrong. But I'm just going to briefly explain. I mean, like, well, do I need to explain what the Constitution actually is? Well, I will, just very briefly.
Really?
Yeah. Our law.
Right on.
Canadian law, Italian law, English law, it all comes from the Roman system. The idea behind the Roman system is that there is one source of authority, and that source of authority can grant authority to other things. In America, that's the Constitution. That is, the Constitution is the fundamental authority of the United States. It is essentially what springs our government. Any law in the United States comes from the Constitution. Well, actually, that's not true, because we have a federal and a state system, but the federal state supersedes states when it comes to federal issues. The point being is that any authority granted by the federal government comes from the Constitution, and that's why it's an important document, and that's where you get the most of your fundamental rights from, regarding privacy, search and seizure, free speech, that kind of thing. All right, I'm done now, Adam. Thank you for granting
me. Oh, I thought you were going to, like, then totally like right turn into like a Tea Party rant.
No.
You'd be like, and this.
Yeah, and this is why Sarah Palin is right. You listen to me, kids. No, I'm just saying honestly, before I went to law school, I don't even think I really knew exactly how the legal system was set up and how it worked and where such authority is granted from.
Cool. So this next story, John, you're going to give us the run through on this one.
Because yeah, baby.
This one you really know, but you want me to give it a read here? Or?
Ride me in, Adam. Ride
All
me
right.
in.
So Total Punk Legends, the Pink Fairies, have announced two shows in the UK. According to our sources, these are going to be the first Pink Fairies shows in a number of years, and the first Pink Fairies shows since the death of sometimes collaborator, sometimes member Mike Farren in July of 2013. So the first show is going to be on November 1st at The Exchange in Bristol. The second is going to be on November 7th at Dingwalls in London. Now, we spoke to Pink Fairies founder Twink earlier this year, and he, by the way, is also working on a new album himself. So Think Pink 2 is the new one, and that one is expected to be out in 2015. John, give the younger folks and me a little bit of a Pink Fairies primer here.
People often say, you know, punk rock was a reaction to hippies, or punk rock was a reaction to AM radio. That's not exactly true. There's an area where hippies and punk rockers kind of are the same people. You know, kind of wild biker kind of guys that do a lot of drugs that are aggressive. I'm talking about the Fugs. I'm talking about the Deviants, which had McFarren. I'm talking about Hawkwind. I'm talking about Pink Fairies. If you ask me, Pink Fairies are the exact connection between hippies and punk rock. The founder of the Pink Fairies is a guy named Twink. He actually goes all the way back to the early British R&B scene, 1961, 1962. In 1962, he was in a band called The Fairies, which were actually label mates with the Rolling Stones. and they actually played a few gigs together way, way, way back in the day. After that, Twink went on and joined a band called The Tomorrow, which was kind of a psychedelic band that had connections to the Beatles. Then he joined a band called The Pretty Things, which was one of the first glam rock band. They actually composed the first rock opera. After The Pretty Things broke up, he did this far out, whacked out psychedelic album called Think Pink, which is, it's one of the scariest, weirdest, neatest albums I've ever heard. Then he formed the Pink Fairies in 1970, I believe it was. He formed the Pink Fairies as a reaction to the hippie culture. He was into the, you know, far out psychedelic exploration thing, but he was tired of the music being kind of wimpy, kind of weak. So he created the Pink Fairies to make mean, pounding, hard-rocking music that was still psychedelic. He came out with this album called Never Neverland, which is an album you got to check out. You could argue, I mean, it's definitely proto-punk. Some people say it's the first punk album. I wouldn't say that, but I would definitely say it had a heavy influence on the punk rockers. Specifically, the song Do It was covered by the Rollins Band and a whole bunch of other punk bands and some other bands, too. So, actually, after Twink left the Pink Fairies, they put out two more albums. And the other two guys from the Pink Fairies, Paul Rudolph and Larry Wallace, were actually the first version of Motorhead with Lemmy. So there's another connection right there for you. Well, they actually broke up in about 1973. After a while, they got back together sporadically in the 90s for a little while. And I think briefly in early 2000s. This show is a very big deal for a number of reasons. First, Twink, he's a real interesting guy, but he's out there. He actually lives in Morocco, and no one knew where he was for like 20 years. It turns out, oh, he was in Morocco.
And that's where I am. No one can find me.
Well, very true. So Twink is now back on the map, and he wants to do shows with the Pink Fairies. This is also important because Mick Farren, who was in the Deviants, he was a collaborator with the Pink Fairies, but I guess he technically joined them in the 90s. He unfortunately passed away last year, so this will be the first Pink Fairy shows without Mick Farren, since Mick Farren joined, I guess, in the 90s, but really the first Pink Fairies album without input from Mick Farren ever. So it's a big deal because the Pink Fairies are a very hard-to-categorize, hard-rocking, far-out band. They play very rarely because Twink, he's a cool guy, but he's out there. And so this is unexpected. They're just saying we're playing two gigs. So if you're in the UK, this show is a must-see. I'm telling you, this is going to be a cool show. And that's what's happening with the Pink Fairies. And yeah. So check it out. I'll keep us rolling along here. Oh, this is neat, too. Back in the American side, talking a little bit about history, a movie called Records Collecting Dust is coming out. And basically just chronicles the records and music that changed the lives of certain famous punk rockers. Basically, famous punk rockers sit down and talk about their record collection and how that music affected them. There's going to be interviews with Jello Biafra, Chuck Tukowski, Keith Morris, John Reyes of Rocket from the Crypt, and 30 other experimental underground music people, basically just talking about the record collections. The trailer's out, and I gotta say, this trailer looked so cool. I'm really excited for this.
I am totally excited for this also. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Adam.
No, you go. You go.
Yeah, no, this, I remember when this got submitted and I took a look at the video, this just looks really like something I would love to sit down with for 2 hours and just drool over, because looking at other people nerd out about music, like, you know, obviously like I do and you guys obviously do too. I mean, that's just something, it's cool to see other people that share that kind of hobby. And to see what inspired other people and also to hear about the kind of nerdy first records that they bought as well. That's something that's really gratifying for me as well, because it makes me feel like, hey, we all have those same experiences. This looks like a really, really great documentary. I can't wait to see it.
We played some clips earlier from something that Jello was on where he was sitting in his record room. It wasn't the same.
No, but no. I think they informed each other. The other thing was from like Complex Magazine. It was called Crate Diggers, and it was just them sitting down with people that have record collections to check that out.
Yeah, I loved like looking at the stuff that was in the background as he was talking, or like seeing the records that were like at the front of his boxes and going like, oh, he listens to that. Or like,
sure,
that was neat. I've got to be like, if I pull myself out of our particular nerdy world, this is probably the least entertaining thing to people that aren't us. I mean, I can't imagine that this level of of just celebration of, you know, like anal record nerdity is
record nerdity.
Yeah, is gonna it's I don't know, I'm just like it's got to be like incredibly up our own butts to like really like, you know, to dig into something like this. So this is super wonderful. I really want to see it. And it's kind of delightful that it exists, but man, it's, I can imagine like sitting down with my wife or someone to watch this and them to be like, okay, you're going to go over here now.
Query. I do interviews for Pug News a fair amount. I often wrestle with this question myself. Is it insulting to an artist to say, what are your biggest inspirations? What are your favorite records? And I say, is that insulting? Because obviously, most artists have inspirations, but on the other hand, is if I'm speaking with Chuck Tikowski, if I'm speaking with Jello Biafra, why am I asking them about what their favorite Stooges record is when I could be talking to them, oh, what about you? What's interesting about you? What are you up to? You see, is it insulting to ask an artist about their favorite records or their inspirations?
It's why would trite.
It's trite, is what you're saying?
It is the one of the outside of like, how's the tour going? It is the biggest like de facto, you know, I don't really know anything about the band, so I'm just going to interview you based on like, who are you? Right. The criteria that could exist. And there's actually, I'm just trying to think of what band it was. There was a band that I saw that made fun of that exact question. Yeah. Okay. So there's a band out of, I think they're out of Vancouver. I'm not really sure they're out of, called Apollo Ghosts. And they had a full length that's really fun, actually. It's kind of like guitar pop thing, indie rock, that came out a couple years ago on You've Changed Records. And the first song on that record is called What Are Your Influences? And I've got to imagine that, like, if you got, like, a bunch of bands in a room and you just ask them, like, what sucks about doing interviews? And, like, you know, how's the tour going has got to be the first one. And then what are your influences has got to be the second.
But then in this documentary, I mean, Jello lights up. Like, Jello is having a blast showing people his records.
I think it's a different context, though. Like, think about it. Like, you're out on tour. You're basically working. You're, you know, you go and you sit down with someone that's supposed to be a journalist and they're supposed to be, you know, digging into what you're doing. And they're asking you basically, like, the same five boilerplate interview questions that they could ask absolutely any artist. It just shows that they're not engaged with what you actually have going on. I could see like it's different than if you're sitting down in a pile of music that you like and go and then someone's like, you know, Jello, what in this pile of stuff that you've amassed and you love and is your stuff influenced you? That's a totally different context.
Along those lines, I love the Jello scenes, and I think Keith Morris too is. But I mean, Jello is a famed collector. Jello's got tons and tons and tons of records. You'd think they'd all be, like, carefully categorized and labeled and stuff. They're literally just, like, tossed around his house, like, with no order whatsoever.
I gotta say, every time I see interviews like this and I see documentaries, I think about American Hardcore, for example, and most of the interviews that were conducted, it looked like it was in, like, one of the director's apartments in front of his record collection. And it's always striking to me to look at these big shelves that are full of all this vinyl. I just want to kind of, like, just pour through there and see exactly what they've got and what matches my tastes and everything like that. So what Adam said earlier on about, you know, this is really interesting for nerds like us, that's totally true. I mean, this is a very, very limited kind of interest, but, you know, in some ways we're kind of a limited podcast as well. So I think people that are listening to us right now,
No, we have millions of listeners.
I meant hundreds of millions.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Not to drag this out, but why are we fascinated about what's in Jello's collection, what's in Keith's collection, what's in Chuck's collection? Why is that so fascinating to us? Is it because we're like, wow, these are the ingredients that make a Jello Biafra? Or we're like, oh, wow, I'm a fan of records. I'm sort of using this video as a proxy friend that we can both talk about a record we enjoy together.
I think it might be a little bit of the latter, but also I think, for myself at least, part of it is seeing people talk about music and seeing people talk about their collections and everything, that turns me on to other things that I will be into as well. I mean, much like you, I'm a fan of the history of music. And so when somebody says, oh, you like this, you really need to check this out. I mean, I really take that to heart and I totally get into it.
Yeah, I think your second one is for sure. I think the reason I want to look at these kind of like, I assume, you know, nicely kind of curated collections of stuff that I'm going to be almost immediately interested in because these are guys that are making the music that I'm interested in. So, it's just one of those things that, like, you want this video to be in, like, really high definition so you can, like, look at background detail.
Well, fair enough. Let's hit them with a song. We've been going on for far too long. Actually, we've been going on just the right amount of time. Adam White, you got a tune, you got a jam, you got something to keep our fingers snapping and happening?
Yeah, I do. I also have an existential crisis that's related to this. So this is a band that at Ottawa, Ontario, like all the bands I've been playing lately. And the reason I've been playing them is because I've been going down the list of bands that play Ottawa Explosion, which is a big garage punk festival that goes on yearly up here. And I've just been like working my way through the Ottawa Explosion band list and checking out all these cool garage bands that are playing up there. So these guys are out of Ottawa. They're kind of like a weirdo surf garage punk band. They're called Tropical Drips with two P's and drips. And I'll get to their song in a sec, but this is one of these bands where I get into it and I really dig this and I really like it and it's fun and it's cool and it's weird. And I'm like, man, I want to get this. And I go and I look it up and it's like run of 100 tapes. And I'm like, tapes. And then I'm looking and like half these bands are just releasing tape things. And I'm like, I can't do it. I can't do the tapes. It's just, you're not going to make me do it.
More for me. More world. For me.
So anyways, this was released. So this song that I'm going to play, which is called We're All Going Away. It was the final song that was on an EP that they released. Or is it even called an EP? I don't know. It was a fucking tape. It was on the B side of a tape that they released back in February of this year on Bruised Tongue, which is the name of the label. It was put out, on a run of 100 tapes and a limited run of 22 12-inch lathe-cut color floppy disks. I don't even know what that is. But that's
John has seven of those tapes.
Yeah. So anyways, super rare, I guess, unless you're up in that area. But hey, you can get it on Bandcamp, so I guess it's not that rare. So anyways, this is We're All Going Away from Tropical Drips from the tape called Is Cool Dude.
Gather my
And we're back on the Punk News Podcast. We're going to keep this rocking along. And we're going to talk about something that a lot of the Punk News kids are into. Something the kids have been looking forward to all year. A lot of hype building behind this band. This band is pretty big. And this is really just their debut LP, but they're already pretty big. Narwhals. 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 That's G-N-A-R-W-O-L-V-E-S. They've released their debut album. We streamed it at Punk News. So if you want to hear the whole thing for free, come to punknews.org and check it out. It's self-titled release. It's out now. Our reviewer, Max, gave it a 7 out of 10. He basically said, moving away from the pop-punk influence of their early release, this new record feels more similar to bands such as Wilhelm Scream and the Flatliners, with who Narwhals have shared the stage with in the past couple of years. The guitar is melodic with dark tones, while the drumming is solid and consistent. So Max thought it was a solid release. He enjoyed it. Not one of the greatest releases of the year. The kids are loving this band. Are you guys into the Narwhals stream, the Narwhals band, the Narwhals dream?
That was quite a lead-in.
I've been polishing my lead-ins. I've been going the real Casey Kasem route, but I wonder if it's too phony, you know? Because I think people like genuine, like DJs, like people that actually just talk. And I've got these spiels, but I love spiels, Adam. I love spiels.
I think it's okay because you're self-aware of your own spiels.
You've got to embrace your inner John Gentile.
And coming back for the top 10 content countdown, coming in at number one, Narwhals.
I struggle with stuff like this. And I struggle with it because I mean, nominally, I'm a big fan of the style. And if you look at, you know, my record collection or anything else, I've got a lot of this kind of stuff that's around. But I think I've heard so much stuff and so much competent stuff that's done in this kind of like gruff vocaled pop punk style that it's taking more to make one of those bands stand out and hook me. And it's one of those, you know, it's not you, it's me sort of criticisms. But so I was listening to this earlier and, you know, there's some catchy songs on here. And, you know, I was digging it while I was listening to it, but I can't remember a damn thing from it now that I've not listening to it anymore. So I don't know what it is. Like, what's the special sauce that takes a band like, say, the aforementioned Flatliners? It makes that I can listen to that band and go like, boom, like I like this. I'm into it. I get it. You know, I can, you know, hum you all the hooks from this record. And then, you know, something like this, where I'm just like, eh, that's cool. Like, I'd see them if they were in town. And then that's where I leave it. So I don't know. I keep doing that. I keep running into that problem. I think I'm just going to have to move over and just start learning how to love dubstep or something. But
the dubstep power hour.
Is that still okay to make fun of? It feels like an old thing to make fun
of. Yeah, no one cares about dubstep anymore.
What are the stupid kids listening to these days? Anything?
EDM, I guess, but that's dubstep. I don't even know, man. I think like
I can't even make a damn reference to the kids anymore. So this is cool. This is good. This is orgcore to a fault, I guess. But there's a lot of, you know, a lot of our listeners, a lot of our audience that are going to be really into this and really into this band and really into this sound because they already are. Definitely go check it out. I got to spend more time with it, I guess.
I definitely agree with what Max said, that when he compared it to the Flatliners and a little bit to a Wilhelm Scream. But when I was listening to it, it kind of reminded me also of a kind of a gruffer Rehasher. If you guys remember Rehasher, right. Roger's side project from Less Than Jake. And kind of like you, Adam, it doesn't really grab me. I mean, I don't hate it, but it doesn't really grab me. It hasn't really hooked me like those other bands, like you were just mentioning right there. So I like it, but I guess I really don't get the whole, I don't get what the furor is with most of our commenters that are into it. One of the things I did notice that people were saying, and I kind of did the same thing, is I kind of confused them with Narboots, which John talks about all the time. And I wondered, is this a spinoff? Is this something kind of similar? And no, nothing similar.
No relation whatsoever, but Narboots remains one of the most interesting, the most exciting, one of the most daring bands that there is. Narboots is wonderful. I wish I could see them more.
Yeah, I mean, I've always sort of had this back and forth thing with this Gainesville pop punk stuff, or Gainesville style pop punk stuff, and
by way of London,
by way of London, no, but I mean, it's the style, right? And sure. even bands that were, I guess, closer to the epicenter of that kind of like no idea inspired sound, I've always been really hot and cold on them. Like, so like take like Rehasher that you mentioned before. Now, I was even a huge Less Than Jake fan, so I have like a natural like into a band like Rehasher, and nothing that they did ever in any way hooked me. And again, same thing. I could put on the record and I could listen to it and be like, yeah, this is fun. And then it would turn off, and then I'd just like goldfish memory, and all of a sudden I'd just like, what? Like, what did I listen to? I'm not there anymore. But then I can take a band like say like Gunmall, like Mike Hale's band, where, you know, similar style, similar sound, everything like that, but I can still recall out of memory a bunch of that band's songs that I haven't listened to them in 5 years. So
also with a member of Less Than Jake.
Oh, who?
Darren.
Darren. Oh, okay. Shit. See, there you go. So yeah, I don't know what it is with these. It may just be that some of these bands are better songwriters than some of the others, and it's nothing about my mental state, but it sometimes feels like it is. So anyways, this is the Narwhals record. It is pretty cool. My own, particular proclivities aside. So you should go check it out.
Well, speaking of something that's real cool, something that's exact opposite of orgcore Gainesville style punk, the Bad Brains and the Cro-Mags are coming together to form a supergroup, although they've sort of performed before under different names. The supergroup is called Regulator. In the band is John Joseph of Cro-Mags on vocals, Dr. No on guitar, Daryl Jennifer on bass, both of the Bad Brains, and Mackie Jason on drums. They're doing a single show so far on September 25 in New York City at the famed Bowery Electric, which I went to a couple of times before. It's a benefit for the Children's Tumor Foundation, which I guess is probably a really old organization, because I can't imagine an organization calling itself the Children's Tumor Foundation now. You know, I think they would call themselves like the Children's Health Foundation or something. At any rate, man, this looks super cool. I've seen the actual Bad Brains once, and as everyone says, it's really not that great. Like, because I mean, they could be great, HR just is not into it. But man, this looks awesome. John Joseph doing an all Bad Brains set with the Bad Brains and Mackie Jason on drums. This is going to be awesome. I'm thinking about going up to New York City for this, but I've got something else planned that same day, so I'm probably not going to make it up, but I'd love to go to this. So this is cool. I don't know if there's a whole lot to say about it, so let's just keep rolling along. Unless you guys...
I kind of like that you stumbled over trying to say Bowery, because I imagine that like Americans all know how to say Bowery, but I don't know how to say Bowery. I always look at it and I want to say Bowery.
Yeah, I think you did very well. Bowery, yeah.
But I'm like people from New York know what to call this. But you know, anyways. So let's just keep going here. So speaking of old bands, and old people, we're gonna talk about the Dead Milkmen.
The Dead Milkmen.
All the levels on the podcast just spiked there. All right, y'all. Yeah, the Dead Milkmen have released their first video from their new album. It's for the song titled Pretty Music for Pretty People, which is also the name of the album. The LP is due out on October 7th, which is in a few weeks. And you can find the pre-order link on Punk News right now if you want to pick that thing up. And the video is on the org. What do you guys think?
Clearly, I'm into this. Dead Milkmen were one of the bands that really kind of got me into punk rock and independent music. I mean, there was like four or five bands that really kind of drew me into the mid 80s, and the Dead Milkmen were one of them. I was really attracted to their humor and to how smart they were. And they were smart in a way that I don't want to say it was exclusive, but you kind of had to be on a certain level to understand the humor that they were going for. And it was a band for nerds. And, you know, in a lot of ways, I was a nerd. And I just loved this band when I was growing up, and I saw them maybe 6 months ago when they were down here in Miami, and they were great. They still had it. I mean, they're clearly much older, but they're just still playing really, really great. And this new song is fantastic, and I've heard a lot of the new record. I still haven't finished it, and I'm really excited for it to come out and for everybody else to be able to hear it.
I guess the grand irony of the Dead Milkmen is their first three records have a lot of funny songs, but not every song on it is funny. So somewhere along the line, probably because of magazines that got pegged as a joke punk band, and that all their songs are jokey, which is kind of sad, because some of their songs are extremely serious.
Well, they're satirical.
Well, true, but I'm saying some songs are just straight up serious with the Dead Milkmen. And what was sad is that because they got pegged as a joke punk band and they didn't want to be known as a joke punk band, their next three or four albums were all really, really serious songs. And so they kind of lost some of their zappiness, some of their snappiness, some of their wit, vim, and vigor, if you will. They put out an album, I guess about 2 or 3 years ago now, called The King in Yellow, which a lot of people don't even realize is kind of like it's a reference to like a Satanic Underground thing. That record was okay. It wasn't great, if you ask me. It was a little too muted, if you will. This new song, I think it's. I think finally, after about 25 years or so, the Dead Milkmen have balanced exactly what they want to balance, what they've been trying to do ever since, like, Eat Your Paisley, which I think is their fourth album. This album has got the funny songs. It's got, like, the hard. Well, not actually not the hard edge, but it's got the zany, wacky, funny edge, but it's got the serious contemplative edge too. So really, I think this is going to be one of the very best Dead Milkmen songs. I think it, for sure it's going to be the best Dead Milkmen album in the last 25 years or so. And what surprised me is Rodney Anonymous. He's the singer, isn't he? Rodney Anonymous.
Yeah, singer and keyboardist.
Yeah, he still sounds like he's like 14, even though he's like 55, which is great. So I think this new record is going to be great. I love this video. I'm so excited Dead Milkmen are back. They just played this awesome show in Philadelphia in a graveyard. It was crazy. It was awesome.
Did you go to that show?
No, I didn't go because I went down the beach, but I was trying to bluff my way through it. But I didn't go. But people said it was legendary, so I'm sorry I missed it.
Oh man, because I follow Rodney on Twitter, and he had been talking about it for about a week before that, and it looked really, really cool. I would have loved to have seen that. This is going to be a great record. I mean, I really am excited for it. And people that haven't paid attention to the Dead Milkmen before, now's a good time to maybe kind of get onto the Dead Milkmen bandwagon and kind of check out where things were coming from 20, 25 years ago.
Mark, people that don't know a lot about the Dead Milkmen, where should they start? What should they check out?
The most mainstream one, I mean, for people that know the band, obviously, is Beelzebubba, because that has the single Punk Rock Girl, and also one of my favorite songs, Stuart. But if you kind of go back before that, Big Lizard in My Backyard, great one to start out with.
Well, there you go. I guess let's wrap this on up, I guess, unless Adam, do you have anything super insightful to say about Dead Milkmen?
No, my whole life I've been a novice with this band. They weren't one of the first. They weren't one of my gateway bands. So by the time I was already into punk rock, they were weird to me. Like I didn't get them at the right time. So I've not yet had that introduction that I need. So I'm just going to take your advice.
Well, you know what? Philadelphia's got. I don't want to say he's a curse, but very few. Well, actually, no. There have been no mega big Philadelphia punk rock bands ever. They always seem to get to a certain level and just kind of stay at that level. They never become huge. I mean, you know, you got huge bands from New York. You got huge bands from LA. Huge bands from San Francisco. Huge bands from DC. But somehow Philly gets skipped over, and I don't know why. Dead Milkmen are pretty much the biggest punk rock band from Philly ever, I would say. Right now, a lot of people think there's sort of a Philadelphia renaissance with bands like Kayatana and that whole group of bands, which is probably true, but it seems as even those bands have kind of peaked at, like, I guess the level of popularity or influence or fame. We'll see. I don't know what it is about Philly, although we do have Mischief Brew, which is a phenomenal band, but for some reason, no bands really seem to become mega big from Philly. I don't know why, but anyway, Dead Milkmen are cool. Adam, I recommend checking out Big Lizard in My Backyard, then Beelzebubble. Both killer records. You can't go wrong. Let's wrap up tonight's podcast with actually a bunch of bands from Philadelphia, including Bad
Hall & Oates.
Well, they're not punk rock, but Hall & Oates are phenomenal. Yeah. I love Hall & Oates, not ironically. I love their soul era. I love their pop era. Believe it or not, I was just listening to a live album of theirs yesterday. Hall & Oates are great, man. Anyways, Bad Canoes have started a new program called MTV 12, where they play music videos of all their favorite bands, or some of their favorite bands. They play Bad Canoes includes Marissa Paternoster from Screaming Females. You longtime listeners might remember about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I played a Bad Canoes track on the podcast. I love Bad Canoes. It's probably my favorite brand new punk rock band. I love Bad Canoes. I think they're so great. They're not exactly like the Slits, but they remind me of the Slits, how they're like aggressive, loud, weird, and wacky. I love Bad Canoes. And actually, that might be why I don't go to the Cro-Mags, because I might go see Bad Canoes instead. I love Bad Canoes. they've got this new program called MTV12. Really, it's just for fun, and they just put together a whole bunch of different music videos and do kind of like, you know, mid-80s skits between the programs, which are pretty funny. We hosted the very first one. It included videos by Waxahachie, Shellshag, Pujol, Priest, Literature, Glasser, this band called Downtown Boys, which I like so much. I went on and bought their CD. Daniel Francis Doyle, Kayatana, Big Eyes, and The Babies, which I'm a big fan of. I thought this video was whimsical and wonderful, and I loved everything about it. I think it's hilarious and a great way to introduce people to music, because there's so many music videos out there now, like people don't even watch them, but if you kind of stitch them together with a storyline or something, I think more people become interested. I saw that our readership had a pretty positive reaction to this, so I was excited that people are doing daring new things and it's being receptive. I dug this.
Holy cow.
Holy cow.
She kept repeating that during the video.
Oh, the this is so charmingly lo-fi, but not lo-fi in a way. It didn't seem like twee to me. It was just like, it was like, we're gonna get a fucking camera and make this funny MTV show and play videos. And it was just sort of like, it was honest. It wasn't trying to be ironic about it, nor was it trying to be like at all produced or you know, polished or anything like that. So there's something very punk rock about this that I really appreciated.
I thought it was a lot of fun. I sat here that morning when it got posted and with my cup of coffee, and I just had a really good time watching it. It was entertaining. And I think John made a really good point where they put it together as a storyline, and you really are more inclined to watch all of those videos. And I did get to see a bunch of bands that I had never checked out before. Priests, I loved that song. That was great.
Well, it looks like we've got a winning combination. Hopefully, we'll have more stuff like this in the future. I can't promise anything, but I'm definitely aiming to ramp up what I'm calling the Saturday feature day. Right now, we've got a photo feature, which has been pretty well received. So, honestly, and email me if there's things that you'd like to see or things that you don't like or want to see or do enjoy, podcast@punknews.org or johng@punknews.org. I think I'd like to increase on Saturday things that aren't like news items that are just kind of fun, amusing things to watch or check out, you know, like videos like this, like our photo feature, maybe editorials, something like that. We'll see. If you guys are receptive, we'll keep it up. But other than that, I think we're about ready to wrap up this podcast. Let me play a tune here.
What do you got?
Last week, I went and saw Nick Turner. You guys might say, man, who's Nick Turner? Let me tell you who Nick Turner is. As I mentioned earlier on the podcast, in the late 60s and early 70s, there was this band called Hawkwind. Hawkwind invented what's called space rock. What's space rock, you say? It's basically hard-driving riffs, sci-fi sounds, and songs about flying in spaceships and killing elves and far-out stuff, man. Nick Turner was the saxophonist, one of the poets, and one of the singers in Hawkwind. Hawkwind had like three poets on retainer and three vocalists at all times. He's been out of Hawkwind for a number of years, but now Nick Turner is touring again with a backing band called Hederschleben. And you say, John, who's Hederschleben? Hederschleben is the new krautrock band founded by Nicky Garrett of the UK Subs, which is pretty wild. So Nick Turner is touring, doing Hawkwind and new stuff with Nicky Garrett of the UK Subs. I mean, it is awesome. I could not believe how awesome the show was. Let me just briefly describe it. It's Nick Turner up there reading this whacked out poetry singing, Nicky Garrett smashing down on his guitar these hard badass riffs, and on either side there's two keyboard players that are singing, playing the keyboards, but not only are they keyboard players, one of them is playing an electric violin, and I kid you not, they were both absolutely beautiful girls, some of the most beautiful girls I've ever seen. And the reason I bring it up is not to say, oh, you know, good looking girl. I mean, they were really beautiful girls. My question is, how do you fulfill those requirements that, like, you get two girls that can play the keyboards, that are beautiful, that can play the violin, that like Hawkwind, that won a tour for basically no money? Only Nick Turner, who is 74, could pull that off. Like, that's a lot of requirements to fill out, you know what I'm saying? But it was an awesome show. He's got an album out. It's called Space Gypsy, and Nicky Garrett wrote some of the songs. If you like this, you'll love Hawkwind. If you don't like this, you probably won't like Hawkwind. This track is called We Ride the Time Waves, and it's on Purple Pyramid Records. off the album Space Gypsy by Nick Turner. We ride the time waves. Back, ready to wrap this up. Guys, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thanks, John.
Thanks for having us.
And as always, you can reach that podcast at punknews.org. As Adam White said, let us know your thoughts. Are you interested in a different format? What do you want to see from the Punk News podcast? We might be making changes in the future. We might not. We're going to see. We're interested in making the Punk News podcast stronger, meaner, more to the point, more interesting, and more exciting than ever. So until then, we'll see you next week.